I am Derek Sainsbury, and welcome to Gospel Tangents.
It's the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Most Mormons know that Joseph Smith ran for presidency of the United States of America. In our next conversation with Dr. Derek Sainsbury, we're going to talk more about this presidential run. Was it a serious campaign, or was it more of a spoiler candidate? We'll find out more about that in our next conversation. I just want to mention one other thing. So you saw on my splash screen this wonderful picture of Joseph Smith Jr. that's kind of a 3D representation. I'd like to thank Adam Worthington for letting me share that with you. Adam's got his own website, knowbrotherjoseph.com. You can not only see this 3D reproduction, but you can buy it for yourself. He's got lots of very cool art out there. So Adam, thanks for sharing that with me. It's fantastic artwork. I can't say enough about it. So check it out, knowbrotherjoseph.com. You can buy a copy of that artwork, as well as he's got Emma Smith and some other 3D representations of Joseph Smith. So check out his website. Once again, knowbrotherjoseph.com. Now back to our conversation. So welcome to Gospel Tangents. I've got a new author here. Could you go and tell us who you are?
I'm Derek Sainsbury, and I work for the Seminaries and Institutes of the Church for a few more weeks.
A few more weeks.
And then I'm headed down to BYU's religion department.
Okay. So you're my first seminary teacher I've ever had on.
Oh, wow.
So that's fantastic. So you're going to go work with the Neil Maxwell Institute, is that right?
No, actually in the religion department in ancient scripture. So I'll be teaching, you know, New Testament, Book of Mormon, Old Testament.
Oh, so that like must that. Mean you have a PhD in something.
I do. I have a PhD in American history.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So did you do a lot of history in your seminary classes, or you don't get to do that too much? No,
well, I mean, the context, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly in church history, Doctrine and Covenants church history year. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of context you can bring in, but not as much.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed that it seems like most seminary teachers don't know too much about history, but you're probably not in that group.
Well, there's a good chunk that do, especially about church history, but yeah, wider history not necessarily as
okay.
much. Yeah.
All right. Now I have to ask, where did you get your schooling?
So I got my bachelor's in political science from the University of Utah.
Oh, Utah man, you are.
Actually, not. I'm a Cougar. got my master's of public administration from BYU.
So you're conflicted.
I'm conflicted, and then I went back to the U to get my PhD.
Back to the U. Oh, so you've got 2 degrees from Utah?
2 from Utah, 1 from BYU.
No, you're supposed to say a Utah man. I am. None of this BYU crap. So, all right. But BYU is a good school. I just like to give people a hard time.
They're both good schools.
All right. Well, so you've got a new book. Why don't you show it to us? Storming the Nation. And so it's about Joseph Smith's presidency. Now, this is a political year here.
Right.
So, I think most people have a general idea that Joseph Smith did run for president when he was assassinated. But the question I think on most people's minds is, was this like a real legitimate run for presidency, or was it just kind of a spoiler candidate, or what can you tell us about that?
Well, how much time you got, right? I mean, so the short answer is yes, it was real. It was a real effort to win the presidency. And most don't know that simply because we haven't talked as much about it, and the history that's been written about Joseph Smith that most Latter-day Saints consume and read hasn't talked about it until recently, and other than to say maybe it was a token effort or he was looking to just spread the message about their problems or whatever. When in reality, it was a real effort. And it comes from two revelatory strands, his run for the presidency. The first is kind of the foundation of everything that Joseph Smith's trying to accomplish with the Restoration, which is the establishment of a Zion society, which is so much different from just from contemporary Christianity, because it includes everything in life, right? I mean, it includes the social part of life, it includes the religious part of life, it includes the economic part of life, law of consecration, later law of tithing. It includes the political part of life, too. And as he tried to create this in a slave state in Missouri, where he had been given revelation that the New Jerusalem, Zion, was to be built, it didn't work out too well, right?
It didn't work well at all.
And when they're kicked out of Jackson County, and then he creates Zion's camp to, by revelation, to come back to Zion's, to Jackson County. In that whole episode, that whole year there, he receives revelations about government, about the fact that the saints are supposed to seek redress from government at every level, that they are to vote for honest, good, and wise. Those are the words of the revelation, men to be in office. And that they that the Constitution and the liberties that of this land exist for all, and to be the saints should stand up for those liberties and protect them for everybody. Well, of course, they're not protected for them, right? And it's just a few years later that they're completely thrown out of Missouri. And after that episode, which is horrifying to them, right? We have theft, we have arson, we have death, we have rape. We have Joseph and others in prison for a long time. When he leaves Missouri, one of the first things he does is go to Washington, D.C. And he's confident that the rest of the country is with the saints, because mm-hmm. the people in Illinois have been so welcoming to the Latter-day Saints and so condemning of what happened in Missouri. But when he gets there, their petition for redress is denied in the Senate, it's denied in the House, and his personal meeting with President Van Buren, as everybody famously knows, does not go well, and he says, I can do nothing for you. And Joseph realizes that the principles that he's received, he's going to have to create something to protect his Zion society as he builds it in Illinois. And so that's what leads to the creation of the Nauvoo Charter, which gives power to the saints, the Nauvoo Legion, which, you know, gives them an opportunity to have something to defend themselves from kind of this future mob kind of experience they've been having as they've tried to create Zion. And for a while, all's going well. And then Joseph, that's the first strand, right, is the reaction to building Zion, right, is how to deal with government. And the second strand starts to develop more in 1842 with revelations about divine governance, right? And so Joseph creates the Relief Society, and he creates it as what you and I would, or not what you and I, but what I call an aristarchic theodemocracy. And this idea of aristarchy, not aristocracy, right?
Yes, which I remember that word you use a lot in your book.
Yeah.
I'd love for you to explain that.
So aristocracy would be rule by the privileged, right? By those born into privilege or buy into privilege with wealth. Whereas aristarchy, which Joseph Smith believed in, was actually part of the official motto of the church in 1838, is this idea of government by good men, by excellent men. And we'd say woman here as far as the Relief Society, because theodemocracy is something he also specifically used those words as well, is this kind of marriage of democracy with theocracy, which sounds really counterintuitive.
Yeah, separation of church and state.
Right, right. And so this idea is that God calls his servants, and the people assent to being governed by those servants. In other words, it's supposed to be both ways, right? When that's obviously going to cause issue if you don't believe that the leaders are called that way. But this first setup is in the Relief Society, where when he creates the Relief Society, he tells them that they are to choose good, honest leaders, and those leaders should stay there as long as possible. And whatever they decide as a group from these leaders is the Constitution. So it's a living Constitution because they had wanted to write down a written constitution like all the other benevolent and relief societies in the country. And he said, no, you're a living constitution, right? It's also at this time that he starts preaching in public about the idea of becoming kings and priests in relief society, in private, but also he calls them to be a kingdom of priests or priestesses. But he's also preaching this publicly. And then, of course, in May of that year, 1842, he introduces what we now call the endowment, which includes this idea of kings and priests and queens and priestesses, right? And his preaching, his public preaching from 1842 to his death becomes more, he weaves politics and religion together more and more and more. For instance, that July in 1842, he gives a talk where he talks about and puts an editorial in the Times and Seasons that talks about called the government of God, and that it was a theocracy, right? That God chose righteous people to lead, and the people assented to them leading, and that this is the way that it's supposed to be. That's where you get that famous quote where man has ruled the world for, I'm paraphrasing, man has ruled the world for 6,000 years and he's blown it, and the Lord is going to come and rule himself. And so this idea continues to develop as he's doing these things, both privately and publicly, that deal with divine governance. And at the same time, in the fall of 1843, there's some blowback about what happens in the congressional election. And he's starting to feel that there's going to be pressure. There's a lot more pressure building from the outside against Nauvoo. And so they decide to write the five candidates that had put themselves forward for presidency in the next coming election. Of those, and they're saying basically, if you're elected, what are you going to do for us? And he only gets three responses back, and those three responses basically say, "There's nothing, you know, there's nothing we can do for you. We can't make any promises or whatever." So the next month, after those responses come back, January 29th, 1844, leaders of the church are meeting in his red brick store upstairs, the same place where the Relief Society's formed, the same place where the endowment's given, the same place where they're making this announcement for presidency, and the same place that the Council of 50 will be organized in a few months, and the same place where the campaign is headquartered in. On January 29th, 1844, they nominate him, and he immediately starts writing a political pamphlet called The Views of General Joseph Smith on the Policies and, or the Powers and Policy of the United States Government. And it's mailed to all the leaders of government in the United States, to all the major newspapers.
And General Joseph Smith.
General Joseph Smith.
He's emphasizing his military background.
Right, because now he's got to be able to, obviously he can't win an election or even affect an election as Prophet Joseph Smith, right? Because it's got to appeal to a wider group. And he is a general in the Nauvoo Legion by state commission. In fact, he's a lieutenant general, which he's the only lieutenant general between George Washington and Ulysses S. Grant in the history of the United States.
So now who makes him lieutenant general?
The governor, Carlin, Governor Carlin.
Oh, really?
Right, yeah. Not necessarily because he thinks he deserves it, but that's the commission. When they do the Nauvoo Legion, that's the commission that Joseph Smith requests. And both parties, when in those early days, it's so evenly split, Democrat and Whig in Illinois, they're stumbling over each other.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Derek Sainsbury. In our next conversation, we'll talk about Mormons being swing voters. Yeah, that's right. Mormons today are known as reliably Republican. But in our next conversation with Dr. Sainsbury, we're going to learn that they were quite the swing voters in 1844.
Or they started to be seen that way by major newspapers back in the East, that not only could they decide the vote in Illinois, but maybe they could decide the vote in a bigger way.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruption. If you'd like a paperback version of our transcripts, go to amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview. Also, if you'd like to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website, and I'll be able to send you a transcript as soon as they are completed, and click the subscribe button. You can also find our latest information on facebook.com/gospeltangents, as well as we're on Twitter @gospeltangents. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. The link is at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents, and you can subscribe there. Also, please give us a 5-star review. If you want to support all of the podcasts as part of the Dialogue Podcast Network, go to lyceum.fm, that's lyceum.fm, and do a search for Dialogue Podcast Network or Gospel Tangents, because, you know, that's a pretty cool one, too. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.